title of my message is Concerning the Crowds. Concerning the Crowds. Over the past few months, we have witnessed the gathering of crowds in the wake of the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Crowds have gathered in this country and around the world. We have also witnessed our government's response to the crowds. When the president wanted a photo op in front of St. David's Episcopal in Washington, D.C., he had the crowds disperse with tear gas. Of course, as people march, as people protest, we have to be concerned about safety and crowd management. But sometimes the response can be too heavy-handed. Sometimes the response can prevent people from exercising their right to assemble and to protest. The federal troops in Portland have used tear gas and other aggressive tactics to address the protesters. In many cases, what they have done has only exacerbated the situation. Crowds are a part of human life. Folk will gather in places to protest. They will gather for recreation, or they will just get together. How we manage crowds is important. And listen, beloved, we're all in some crowd. We're all participants in crowds. There are all kinds of crowds in America, not just in Portland. And these crowds are not all gathered in one place. And these crowds are not all organized. There are crowds all over this country. There are crowds of homeless people, folk with no food or shelter. Just look around Austin. Look around downtown Austin. There are crowds of persons and families who are ill right now from the coronavirus. And that crowd is growing every day. There are crowds of sick persons in ICUs where in this country ICUs are at capacity or near capacity in many places. There are crowds of persons who are unemployed because of this pandemic. There are crowds of families suffering because businesses are closed and the special unemployment benefits have run out. There are crowds of businesses that have closed or have become bankrupt because of COVID-19. There are crowds of restaurants and bars that have closed. And even there are crowds of parents and families trying to prepare for the school year, wondering what will happen to their children, and educators wondering what will happen to them as well. We're all a part of a crowd in one way or another. And you had better be careful how you treat crowds. You might be in one position today, but tomorrow might put you in a different crowd. We can learn a lot from Jesus. He knows about crowds. He knows about crowd management. In our text for today, we revisit one of Jesus' interactions with the crowds. Let me provide Matthew's context for this story. You see, according to Matthew, the interaction with this crowd comes on the heels of the news of the death of John the Baptist. The text says in verse 13, when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. So that after learning that John the Baptist had been beheaded by Herod, Jesus goes away to be by himself. And you remember what happened to John the Baptist. You remember that he had married Herodias, and the daughter of Herodias danced for him one day. And Herod said to the daughter, I'll give you whatever you want since you have danced so well and pleased me. And Herodias went up to her daughter and said, ask for the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And so when Herod asked the daughter what she wanted, she said, I want the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And Herod consents. And the text says, when Jesus gets the news, he retreats to be alone, perhaps to pray and to reflect. But as we see in the story, Jesus doesn't get a chance to do that. You see, Jesus rides in a boat to the other side of the lake. The crowds follow him on foot. And when Jesus arrives at his destination, the crowds are already there to greet him. And we might say, wow, he doesn't even have a chance to rest or to clear his head. But we have to understand that if the crowds follow him on foot, there have to be some serious things going on. Sometimes folk interrupt us because they are troubled. Sometimes troubles can't wait until a more convenient time. But look at how Jesus responds to this crowd. The text says, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them. So Jesus, upon seeing this crowd, is filled with compassion. Jesus doesn't say, the crowd is interrupting my solitude and my rest. He doesn't attempt to get away from the crowd. He doesn't get back on the boat and leave. Jesus doesn't look out there and say, oh, look at all these folk out here. Let me get back on the boat and turn around. Instead, Jesus is filled with compassion. His thoughts move from what he's feeling about the death of John the Baptist to what the crowds are experiencing. And I'm sure that Jesus senses some needs and issues in the crowd. He knows that they would not have traveled such a distance for nothing. He knows that the crowds are troubled, and he is filled with compassion. Any attempt at crowd management, even in this country, has to begin with the right spirit. If you can't identify with what folk are going through, then you can't truly help them. It takes compassion to get away from your issues and your agenda in order to understand what others are going through. Too often, those entrusted with the responsibility to serve and protect have no compassion, and they are not willing to put themselves in the shoes of others. The NBA resumed its season last week, and games are taking place in this bubble. But if you watch the games, you'll see on the court there is a sign on the floor that says Black Lives Matter. And then in place of their names, players have special references to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor on the backs of their jerseys. And players and coaches and staff are now kneeling during the national anthem. Why is this happening? This is happening because players are calling for compassion and solidarity from the league. The point is, if you don't care about my pain and my struggles, you don't care about me. If you don't know my story, you can't help me. It takes compassion, beloved, to manage the crowds. Jesus is filled with compassion. But he goes beyond that. Jesus also takes time to address the concerns of the crowd. The text says, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. It goes on to say, as evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, this is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food. So Jesus goes beyond compassion. He doesn't just feel for them. Some of us just feel sorry. Jesus goes into action. His place of solitude is transformed into a place of healing. No doubt as Jesus looks at the crowd, he sees they are bringing their sick to him for healing. He sees sick mothers. He sees sick fathers. He sees sick children. He sees the lame, the deaf, and the blind. And Jesus heals their sick. He goes into action and addresses their concern. You'll notice in the story that the folk don't ask Jesus for anything. They just show up. They find out where he is and they show up. They don't come with special requests or petitions. Sometimes folk simply show up with their concerns. They need help, but they don't always know how to ask for help. Sometimes they know they're in trouble, and they know they're the cause of the trouble, and they don't know how to ask for help. They just show up. And when this crowd shows up, Jesus goes into action. Notice something else. Jesus stays with this crowd well into the night. He puts in the time to address as many concerns as possible. Ministry takes time and action. And clearly, Jesus' disciples don't get it. They want to send the crowds away. They think that Jesus has done enough. But when you do not begin with the foundation of compassion, when you don't start with compassion, the only thing you might want to do is get rid of hope and send the crowds away. Congress is debating another stimulus package. And of course, the extra unemployment bump ended last week. And one thing that disturbed me, I heard a senator say this past week, if we keep giving folk unemployment compensation, they won't have an incentive to go back to look for work. I get that. Some folk do take advantage of handouts. Some folk make no effort to pull themselves up and work. But it is better to work than to be dependent upon the government. I understand that. I get that. I remember, this is on my paper, when the government was giving out cheese years ago. I remember seeing folk drive up in Mercedes-Benz and Cadillacs just to get government cheese. Some folk just want a handout. I get that. But the only thing is, we're still in this pandemic. Businesses are shut down. And some jobs are not available. And folk are in dire need of resources to sustain themselves and their families. We have to address those concerns. It's easy to be critical when you're getting a paycheck. But when you're in the laid off crowd or the furloughed crowd, it's a different situation. Jesus takes the time to address the concerns of this crowd. So the Bible says, as Jesus sees a crowd, he is filled with compassion. But not only is he filled with compassion, he goes beyond compassion to address their concerns. There's one more thing I'd like to say that about what Jesus does. And I want to sort of say it this way. Jesus stretches the resources. He stretches the resources. The text says, as evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people sit down on the grass, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men. Besides women and children. Look at this. Look at this, beloved. Jesus has already responded to the crowd. He has already responded with compassion. He has already addressed their concerns. He has already healed their sick. He has been with them all day. Jesus has acted. He has engaged in ministry. It's not like he hasn't done anything for them. But when Jesus' disciples tell him to send the crowds away or disperse the crowds, Jesus' reaction is powerful. The disciples say, "It is late. Crowds are hungry. Send them away. Let them go into the towns and buy something to eat." In other words, the disciples are finished. The crowds are no longer their responsibility. They want the people to fend for themselves. So the disciples offer 2 solutions to Jesus. Disperse the crowds and make the people buy their own food. But Jesus says something powerful. He says they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. In other words, you feed them. What a statement. Because according to Jesus, the crowd should not be dispersed when their needs aren't fully met. Jesus is willing to let the crowds remain until their needs are fully met. Why do the protests continue? Because there's still a need to be met in this country. Jesus teaches that ministry is never completely over. There's always something more to be done. Jesus also teaches that his ministry is not just spiritual, it is also physical. So that the church must address both the spiritual and physical needs that folks present. Part of our problem in this country is that too many people just want to get rid of other folk. They don't care whether issues are addressed. They just want to send the crowds away. But Jesus in this story isn't through yet. He shows the disciples how to truly minister to the crowds. I said he stretches the resource. Look at what happens. Look at how he does it. The disciples tell Jesus, there isn't enough food for everyone to eat. The crowd only has 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread. According to the disciples, the resources are too limited to include everybody. And of course, you might say, they're just being realistic. We don't have enough money to go around to every American who's in trouble. We can't feed everybody. We're just being realistic. But Jesus will have none of that. He says, bring it to me and let me show you how to stretch the resources. He instructs the people to sit down in companies. And so Jesus goes from being a healer to being the host. He's going from healing to being the host of a banquet for these people. And then Jesus takes the bread and he takes the fish. He holds it up before God and blesses the food. He prays about it. If you're going to stretch resources, beloved, you need some divine assistance. That's what we need in Washington, D.C. We need some folk who know how to pray, who know how to call on God. You need divine assistance to stretch resources. And look at what he does. He turns these disciples into waiters. He makes them serve the very folk they were trying to send away. Disciples said, it's late, man. It's late. Let's send these folk away. Jesus said, no, go put on your waiter jacket. It's time for you to start serving people that you're trying to get rid of. And then as soon as the disciples pass out the food, a miracle occurs. Somehow, the food begins to stretch, and it keeps on stretching until the whole crowd is fed. Somehow, some way, limited resources stretch and become unlimited. Look at that. A miracle occurs. Everybody gets a meal. The food comes from the people, but the stretching comes from God. When they pass out the food, God does a miracle. And everybody said, I know scholars debate whether this is a true story and whether there was just symbolic trying to explain a deeper principle. But the lesson is, if you don't start with compassion, you will send folk away. And if you send the folk away, you'll never discover a path to stretching the resources so that everybody can share. The lesson is, ministry is not over at the point of compassion. He didn't just call us to be compassionate. Ministry is not over after the healing. Ministry is over until all the needs are met. I like what Jesus says. He says, bring them here to me. He performs a miracle. Now, miracles have already occurred early in the day. But one miracle isn't enough. Jesus has already healed their sick. That was a miracle. But one miracle isn't enough. Some of us are one-trick ponies. We've only got one trick and that's it. But Jesus has more miracles in store. At the end of the day, in the evening, when the sun has set, Jesus still has another miracle for the people. He takes someone's picnic lunch and stretches it. And that's what we need in America. We need some stretching. The rich keep getting richer. The poor keep getting poor. We need some stretching so that everybody is included. Those of us from big families have witnessed the stretching genius of our mothers and grandmothers. Now, I know some of you might not admit that you didn't know you were poor. You thought you were just like everybody else, or everybody on the block. You might not admit it. You might want to say, well, I've always been middle class. We've always had money. We've always had resources. But some of us did not realize until we became adults how meager the resources were in our families. And our mothers and our grandmothers had to stretch stuff. And they didn't always have the meat for a meal or all the ingredients to feed everybody. I was reared in a big family. I had several siblings. But so mothers had to be creative and learn to stretch what they had. And some of our best meals were stretched meals. They would take the leftovers and make meals out of them. They would go in the deep freezer, that's what they called it, and get some frozen food and go in the pantry and get some canned food and throw it together and create something delicious. We didn't know all the things that were going on. They would just call it a new name. It was the same old food thrown in the same old pot, but called by a different name. It was called stew. They take red beans and rice and make stew and soup. We might have had limited incomes and limited resources, but we did not go hungry. Because our parents worked to ensure that everybody had a place to stay. Everybody had something to eat. Some of these top corporations are getting the money that should go to small businesses. Small businesses are closing because the big boys want a monopoly on the resources. We need a system that doesn't allow the well-heeled and the well-connected to gobble up all the resources. We need to put folk in office who know how to stretch things so that everybody can be included. What a lesson from Jesus. Jesus can perform miracles. And so I encourage you today to put what you have in the hands of Jesus. In the hands of Jesus, stomachs are filled. In the hands of Jesus, burdens are lifted. In the hands of Jesus, everybody gets a blessing. In the hands of Jesus, the crowd is satisfied. In the hands of Jesus, ministry continues. In the hands of Jesus, resources are stretched. You're going through something in your life right now? Put it in Jesus' hands. You don't know how you're going to make it? Put it in Jesus' hands. Somebody said, let Jesus fix it for you. He knows just what to do. Whenever you pray, let him have his way. Let Jesus fix it for you. Beloved, we offer Christ to you right now. We want to extend the invitation to Christian discipleship. And we offer to you someone who knows how to stretch things. Because he's in the compassion business. He cares about you. He cares about your families. He cares about your situation. He won't send you away. If you come to him with your heart and give him your life, he'll take you into his family and he'll bless you. We invite you to come. We extend the invitation to Christ. Wherever you are, bow your heads, lift your heart to Jesus, call on him in prayer, and ask him to come in. We offer Christ.
We offer Christ to you, oh my brother. We offer Christ to you, oh my sister. He will give you brand new life, life abundantly. Oh, come, come on to Christ. Oh, we offer We offer Christ to you, oh my sister. He will give you brand new life abundantly.